Steve and Justin use Y-charts for their winning investment research. So start your free trial now. And if you purchase, mention InvestTalk and get a generous discount at YCharts.com.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. It is Wednesday, February 6th, 2019. I'm Steve Peasley, and I thank you for joining me today. And whether you're a regular listener, doesn't matter, or just beginner, it doesn't matter. We have one goal here on the show, and that is to make you a better investor, to help you achieve, you know, what we describe as financial freedom. And again, I pointed out the last week or two, financial freedom is whatever you define it as, not what somebody else defines it as. Some people don't know what that means for themselves. Well, a good investment advisor will help them get to that point, to help them decide that, what it means to them. You just ask questions. You ask pointed questions. When do you want to retire? And, you know, at what age is your ideal time to stop working for a living? Or what is your definition of retirement? We need that too. What is the definition of retirement for you? Does that mean you're just going to stop working? You want to continue working? You want to do part-time? You want to do hobbies? What is it for you? And sometimes, you know, that's pretty difficult to answer because you don't give it a lot of thought, and you really should as you get into your 50s. You really should start giving that some thought. Where do you want to be? So that's what we're going to do on this show. I have one goal on this show, and that is to help you achieve your personal financial freedom, whatever that is. Everybody has a different definition of that, by the way. Okay, so what happened in the market today? It was pretty interesting. After the State of the Union message yesterday, markets on average are up, and today's market was not. It was down. Dow was down 21, the NASDAQ down 27, the S&P down 6. Those kind of stats don't really mean anything. You know, as to after each State of the Union message, what does the market usually do? What does it really matter? It doesn't really matter. It's just an interesting stat. Now, trade negotiations between us and China seem to be moving in the right direction, right? Because Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin is going to Beijing early next week. He wouldn't be going there if it wasn't some kind of positive move in the right direction. A senior White House official, and President Trump hasn't yet committed to meeting, a senior White House official said that President Trump, he hasn't committed to meeting with Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader. If there was a meeting between the two, if the two got together, that would probably signal a very close to the deal. They're very close. If they were going to have a meeting, that means, you know, most of the details have been worked out. So if you hear that a meeting is going to happen between them, that's what your assumption would be. Now, I assumed, and I have been assuming up until recently, that if a deal got together with, if we got a deal, that will automatically mean the market will go up. Well, the market may be building that in already, or some of it in, with the big move up it had in January. It's hard to know. It depends on when it happens. So we might not get a very big boost, but it will be positive for the economy, and that should be positive for the market in the long run. It should be. And, you know, earnings season is winding down for the fourth quarter. It's been better than they expected. So that, you know, the S&P is up, what, 5% for the year? All that mostly in January, and even this the first week here in February, up 5%. Because of the positive reaction in January, the IPO market's going to probably pick up in 2019. It's slowed down because of the government shutdown, but they're probably going to pick up. So expect some IPOs coming out this year. I don't know. I don't know any off the top of my head whether, you know, which ones are going to be, you know, what they are and how great they'll be. But, you know, some of the IPOs, recent IPOs, have been pretty big. Remember Alibaba? I mean, that was huge. That's the Chinese e-commerce, online commerce company. I mean, it came out $21 billion first day. Within 4 days, it was $25 billion. Visa came out. You didn't know Visa was a private company, not a public company. That was in 2008. That was $18 billion. These are huge. I don't necessarily see one that big coming out here in the near future. It just doesn't feel like that we have. I haven't seen any of my reading that's big. So we'll see. We'll see. There's always news coming out. There's always interesting news coming out every day. We got some interesting statistics finally starting to come out. They're still behind. We had one that was delayed this week because of the shutdown, but a couple of them came out late, but they came out finally this week. So I think they'll catch up in a couple of weeks, and we'll finally get up to date, economic statistics. And as you can tell, there's a lot always of interesting market news that drives markets up and down, and just some of it's just interesting. I find it interesting. But, of course, the first job here is to answer questions, your questions. And you can call our Anytime Listener line anytime you want. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. This is Giorgio calling from Houston. I love your show. Can you give me your opinion on the stock BGS? Thank you so much. I really love your show. Thank you.
Okay, BGS is B&G Foods Company, manufactures shelf-stable food products such as jellies and hot sauces sold in the United States. It is a $1.9 billion company, so it's a small cap. The numbers look pretty healthy for this company. Not fantastic, but pretty healthy. They're going to make $1.99 toward 2018. They haven't reported yet. That's a little less than it was last year. Next year, it's going to be $2.03, so just up a couple of percent. They're growing 3 to 10% on their sales. The thing that is really nice is the dividend. They pay a 7.4% dividend to $25.72 stock. They make $2 and they pay 7%, there's $1.50, so that's kind of hefty on the dividend, but it is doable. Their cash flow is $2.94. So it's a pretty healthy company. We own this in one of our managed accounts because we really like that dividend. The company is a healthy company. This would be around the price you would want to buy it, around 25. It fell from $30 recently down to $25.72 today. And that seems to be where there's support. It's done that before and bounced off. So we'll see. It also has gone all the way down last May. It went all the way down to $21.50. But those are pretty low numbers for this company. They've always been in the 30s, high 20s and low 30s for years and years now. So they're kind of on the lower end of their range. Our main talking point today, proposed Senate legislation would limit stock buybacks if it passed. And it really could be bad for the market, limiting stock buybacks. So we'll look at that in a minute. Seniors are to be blamed, are blamed in some situation, for the housing shortage. Seniors, how's that possible? We'll talk about that. And did you see the details on Disney? Disney's rolling out its digital plans. Everybody's trying to compete with Netflix, and this Disney is rolling out its version of competing with Netflix. So we'll talk about that. And finally, did you see that Tesla lowered the price on their Model 3 cars? That's the second time this year. So how low is it? Model 3. Remember where he was going to get those down to about $30,000, wasn't it? Wasn't that what's supposed to be their Model 3 cost? Anybody who has a Model 3, I bet you paid a lot more than $30,000. So we're going to discuss that. So those are what we want to talk about today. Anything you want to talk about, as long as it's financial, we'll talk about. So you can ask any questions you want. If any of the information discussed on today's program raises any further questions in your mind, with regard to the market or your portfolio or your 401k, any kind of financial question, I really do encourage you to reach out to Justin or myself at KPP Financial. Send us an email. We'll answer your questions. You can also call our Dana Point office if you want. You know, the number is, you know, you can easily reach us. There's never a problem to reach us. Our anytime listener line number never closes. 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk, and it's hard to believe, but we are already into February, and you're going to need unbiased investing advice. We've got it covered. Steve's here now taking your questions live. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Dave from San Leandro. Love your show. It's a great show. Just a couple quick questions. When you short a stock, is there a time limit when you're going to redeem it, when you're going to buy to close? Also, is this a good time entry point for Amazon? What is your feeling on that? Thank you, sir.
Okay, selling a stock short, there is no time limit. And what that means is when you're selling a stock short, just for everybody, is you're borrowing somebody else's stock and you're selling it in your portfolio. It's not your stock. You never owned it. You borrowed it from somebody. Your brokerage lets you do that, okay, by just the order you put in, sell short. And they'll go get the stock. They'll borrow somebody, put it in your portfolio, and then let you sell it. You sell it short, but remember, you've just borrowed that stock. You've got to give it back someday. You have to give it back. But there's no time limit when you have to. Now, there's a situation where you will be forced to buy it back, but that's kind of rare. And that's, you know, if your brokerage firm says you're losing too much money and you need to get out. It's kind of rare. Amazon, they're going sideways right now. They have been for, for a month or two. No, not two. For about a month, they've been going sideways. I think they're consolidating. They've hit a lot of resistance right at their 200-day moving average, which is $1,720. They're at $1,640 right now. But they hit that, bounced off a little bit a couple, three, 4 days ago. If you're asking me, is this a good buy point, you're going to have to be willing to pay up for Amazon. Amazon's a great company, provides online retail services. You know, it's a big company, does a lot of different things. They're going to make $39.36 a share next year. That's 44% more than this year of $27.34. So that's a really, you know, very good earnings growth. But at $40 a share in a $1,640 company, you know, that you're talking about not a cheap company. You know, so don't think that if you're going to buy it, that you're getting a bargain. I mean, that's a, 40, 41 P.E. ratio? Now, just so you know, Amazon's P.E. ratio has never been below 65 in the last 5 years. So that's not expensive for Amazon. They keep growing 20% or more in their sales. They have a huge return on equity of 28%. They have a huge cash flow. So, you know, this is not a bad price to buy it. As long as you're a long-term holder, you get a workout. Amazon, AMZN is the symbol, everybody. AMZN. Here's an investing term for you. Exchange-traded fund, ETF. What's an ETF? You've heard me use it lots, but you know what it is? An ETF is a marketable security that tracks a stock index, a commodity of some kind, or a group of commodities, bonds, or any kind of basket of assets. Okay? That's what an ETF is. So most ETFs track stock indexes, as you know, and they trade like a stock. You buy and sell them intraday. Okay? But it is a type of a mutual fund, exchange-traded fund. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, and I believe that every investor should determine their own individual risk tolerance. You really should. And the first step is go to our website, investtalk.com, and answer the risk questionnaire. It will give you a risk tolerance number between 0 and 100. 80 is about the S&P 500, by the way. InvestTalk.com. It's the Riskalyze questionnaire. 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk, and we're glad you're with us today for 1 hour of financial news and perspective. And your decision-making process can benefit from this practical and unbiased advice, especially if you consult with Steve or Justin. Step up now with your questions. Call 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Alex in Newark. How you doing, Alex?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, got it. Two questions. One, if I'm doing a systematic monthly purchase into Roth or the taxable account, doesn't matter, is a mutual fund better or ETF? Question number two, if I do want to go with mutual fund, can you recommend a mutual fund for large stock and medium stock that you like that is a good performer?
Okay. I prefer myself ETFs, but you got to remember ETFs are unmanaged. They are either an index or a group of stocks in the oil sector, or you know, they represent a country. It could represent, you know, just whatever it wants, but it's not a managed. No, I haven't seen it. There's only maybe one or two, I think, relatively new that are managed. Mutual funds usually are managed unless you're going to go into an index. If you're going to an index, the way to go is ETF because they're cheaper. They're cheaper.
Okay,
there's still
so
a cost.
If I go ETF, what do you like ETF? And
I cannot recommend things over the air. The SEC has rules that I have to quote unquote know my client. So I can answer a question, and I could send you. I have a group of dividend paying ETFs. I could send you, but I can't recommend them. And I can't like say, okay, buy this particular mutual fund or this particular ETF. This is a great one. I can't do that. They won't let me do that.
A dividend paying ETF would be a good but you know, when you say ETF, I was reading an article. They say that if you buy it on a regular basis, like $500 or $1,000 a month, ETF is going to cost you more money on the long run. Is that a true statement or is that a bad write-up?
Well, it's not necessarily true, and it's not necessarily false. It depends on what you, for instance, Vanguard ETFs are very, very low cost, okay? And if you're buying on a monthly basis, are you paying a transaction fee? In other words, cost you $10 to make a trade or $5 to make a trade. If that's the case, dollar cost averaging, every time you buy something, it's costing you a transaction fee. And that could eat into you, especially if you're not, your transaction is only like a couple $100s. You know, that means that transaction fee is kind of steep over a length period of time. So it depends.
Vanguard pretty good performing ETFs? Because I was talking to this person, and he says Vanguard is not as good performing as some other ones that he indicated.
Well, see, then I hate to tell you this, but that person probably doesn't know what they're talking about, because most ETFs track indexes or a group of stocks. So, you know, it depends on how the index does or that group or that sector that you're investing in. And then it's a matter of, well, how much does it cost to buy it? So, you know, whether, you know, an S&P ETF in Vanguard or S&P ETF in Fidelity, both of them do exactly the same performance. But the Fidelity is probably more costly than the Vanguard. So, you know, when someone says, well, the ETFs don't do as well as something else, well, I'm not buying that necessarily. Okay? Thanks for the question. Appreciate it. Alex, appreciate that. Let's go to John Santa Cruz. He wants to talk about MAC. Who's MAC? Let's take a look.
Mace,
oh, that's McRitch? McRitch?
Yeah.
How you doing, John?
Good. How are you?
Good. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I wondered if the dividend, if you think it's safe, and if this current price of Macerich is, do you think it's a value at this price?
Okay. Macerich Company is a REIT, real estate investment trust, that acquires and owns and develops regional and community shopping centers across the United States. Okay, so it's a REIT. And the definition of REIT, it's got to pay 90% of its earnings out in the form of a dividend to avoid corporate income tax. So it has to pay 90% of its earnings. And next year, the earnings of this company is going to be $3.77. Okay, $3. No, come on, Steve. 3.77 times 90%. Let's see what that equals. Okay, $3.39. Okay, so they make $3. They're going to make $3.77, and they're 90% of they got to pay $3.33, and as a percentage of that, that is about 7 or 8% of the stock price. So yeah, their 6.7% dividend looks like it's, you know, they're covering it. Okay. Uh-huh. Now the issue is they're not growing. They're kind of stagnant. Their sales are kind of stagnant, and so has their earnings been stagnant for the last 3 years. So shopping centers, you have to decide, is shopping centers a good investment? Because that's what they are. They own and develop regional and community shopping centers across the U.S. I'm a little worried about that sector, John, because of Amazon. It's simple as that.
Yeah.
Meaning they're not going out of business or anything. It's just, you know, a little concern. That's all I'm saying. Okay? Appreciate the call, John. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Tomorrow on Invest Talk, unlike Amazon, Alphabet doesn't get a pass on spending. So does that make Alphabet, which is Google, a better investment? And that story is tomorrow, everybody. But for now, I'm Steve Peasley, and I'm ready to take your questions at 888-99-CHART.
The time is now. And if you act now, the benefit to your financial future could be measurably significant. This is your chance to sharpen your investing skills through a valuable online classroom learning opportunity, InvestTalk Academy. Enrollment in InvestTalk Academy will introduce you to a weekly series of live investing classes conducted by KPP Financial Principals and InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein. You'll profit from a critical degree of focused mentoring led by Steve and Justin. Hear their full analysis of the market. Follow along with charts and data points. Understand technical and fundamental analysis. Develop the mindset to become a successful investor. InvestTalk Academy offers an unprecedented value for serious investors. Register now at InvestTalkAcademy.com. . 2019 has certainly been interesting for investors so far. Steve and Justin encourage you to make InvestTalk a part of your daily routine. Their unbiased guidance can be an invaluable aid to your efforts at building a strong portfolio as you work and plan for your comfortable financial future. Now, the phone lines are open, Steve is here, and he's taking your questions live. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to James in Sonoma. He wants to talk about preferred stocks. Preferred stocks act very much like bonds. How you doing, James?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, and that actually dovetails into part of my question. Hey, I want to know what you think about this fund. As you can see, preferred stock, high dividend, doesn't cost very much as far as in, you know, ETF fund what it is. It would go in my IRA. Mm-hmm. You and I are the same age. I just retired. It would be something I would leave there forever. And I wonder what you think about this fund and what you think about preferred stocks in general in this sort of market. And do you guys have any preferred stocks?
We do not have preferred stocks. We don't. We don't have a program designed for that. We do have a program for bonds, and we have a program that has dividend paying stocks and bonds, combination of both, but we don't have anything with preferreds in them. And it's not because we're trying to avoid them. It's really not. It's just that we have never decided to, I have never decided to build a portfolio around preferreds. There's absolutely nothing wrong with preferred stocks. There's nothing wrong with preferred ETF. And I'd rather see you take the ETF road or the mutual fund road buying preferreds, because anybody can buy anything, but they don't do it with knowledge. You can get hurt You know, same thing with preferreds. You know, you just can't ignore the underlying stocks. What is a preferred stock, everybody? It's just a stock of a company that it doesn't act like a real stock because it is a kind of a hybrid bond stock issue. They pay a dividend. They pay a certain amount per yield of a dividend, like 5% or 4%. And you know, it's not just your normal stock and it's not a bond. It's kind of a hybrid between the two. They're not real popular because you don't hear a lot of people talking about them, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with them. But I'd rather see you do it in a ETF, James, simply because it does take some knowledge. Just like anything else, you can get ripped off. So my second
question would be then, is this counted as part of, would you count this, your asset allocation as a stock or as a bond?
I would count it more as a bond, not a stock. Okay? But even though there are, you know, it can go up and down in price, but it generally doesn't. It generally stays pretty stable. So I would count it more as a bond in your portfolio. James, appreciate the questions. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, what's our main talking point today? Well, we have a proposal in front of Congress from Sanders and Schumer to limit stock buybacks. Okay, so they want to limit companies buying back their stock. What is their thinking in this? Well, their thinking is you know, buying back their stock, they're really helping a smaller group of people, which is the shareholders and the corporate executives, and they're not helping their employees. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, so what do you want them to do with the money? Do with their extra cash? Well, most companies would reinvest it in their own company, building more factories or whatever, or they'll buy back their stock, or they'll do a combination of both, and that's pretty normal. Well, they don't like that buyback part. They want the company to do something else with it. They think that Americans should be upset or outraged that the profitable corporations are laying off workers and while spending billions on to boost their value of the stock by buying back their stock. That kind of upsets me when they say that because they're relating two things that are not related. Okay, the company is making money and profitable. It says we should be outraged that these profitable corporations are laying off workers while spending billions of dollars to boost their stock value. So are you saying they should wait till the company's not profitable and then they can lay off workers? Is that what you're saying? Well, by that time, it's too late. See, the companies have to look forward. So laying off workers or not laying off workers has really nothing to do how much money they have or are making today. It's all about next year or the year after. They're looking forward. And I have a problem because I'm more of a free market type of guy, having politicians telling me, you, and even companies what to do with our money. You already tax it. You know, now you want to tell us what to do with what we have left. And I have a problem with that from a philosophical point of view. Should stock buybacks be changed or whatever? Well, isn't that up to the owners of the company? They own the company, the stockholders. What they do with the company profits, isn't that up to them? Okay, if you want government to control corporations, well, you need to go to like China or Russia, or how about North Korea? How well that country does with their companies? I just don't have the philosophically. I think you should let the government do the government thing. You can tax the companies, tax them all you want, within reason until you destroy them, but to control what they actually do inside the company, I don't think that should be up to the government. I'm Steve Peasley. I hope you are making the right choices with the money in your 401k or your 453, 457, 403b, whatever you got. And candidly speaking, unless you have a lot of time to study fundamentals and trends, it's pretty difficult to know when you should get in or out, or whether you should just keep buying, what you should buy. It's difficult to know. And if someone doesn't know, I always tell them, well, just stay in. As long as you're in for the long haul, just stay in. But there are things you can do. We have a program called Active 401k, and it's a program that decides what to do with your particular portfolio based on your risk and your risk tolerance and what mutual funds or assets you get to pick from. It will do it for you. Go to investtalk.com and look at Active 401k program. And now I'm taking your questions live, 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk, made possible by KPP Financial, where they describe their services as independent thinking, shared success. And this philosophy is why KPP Financial can be of great value to investors. KPP principals Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are committed to unbiased guidance. They don't upsell clients into expensive and questionable investments. Instead, Steve and Justin provide honest opinions and proven strategies based on the individual's current portfolio and risk tolerance. Working with KPP Financial, you can be assured of consistent dedication toward the goal of helping you achieve financial freedom. You can get things started with a phone call or a simple message through investtalk.com. The InvestTalk radio and podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Jeff calling from Iowa, and I have a question about HSA accounts and possibly using them as a savings vehicle for retirement. Currently, I'm about 15 years away from retirement. I have an HSA plan with my insurance at work, and I was thinking maybe putting a little away to an extra away to an HSA to hold back for retirement purposes with the triple taxation benefits, and knowing that on average $500 per month will be used for health care expenses in retirement. And I know that we can use the HSA for to pay for premiums of Part B Medicare as well, but just want to kind of get your thoughts on what you would think about saving into an HSA for retirement instead of a regular IRA. Thank you.
Well, I don't think it should substitute for an IRA or a Roth IRA, but I do think it's a good idea. HSA health savings accounts, everybody, you can use them. You know, whatever you put in a HSA is like an IRA, is tax deductible. But yeah, the money in there has to be used for medical purposes. Okay? And as he just mentioned, in retirement, you can use part of the Part B premium in your Medicare out of your HSA. So that's a good idea. And we all know that health costs as you get older and older and older just goes up. So you will be able to use your HSA assets, you know, to help pay those off. Meanwhile, whatever you put in there, it's tax deductible. So it's a good thing. I just don't think it should substitute for your regular savings IRA, Roth IRA. But having one and putting money in it is good. You can invest it any way you want to, everybody. I mean, you have, it's like an IRA as far as being able to invest it. Okay? So HSAs, so take a look at them. 888-99-CHART. Iger offers new details on Disney's digital plans. Walt Disney Company. They are dividing their company into three basic categories. The streaming live Disney Plus. They're going to call that Disney Plus. Then, of course, their theme parks, and then their traditional studio and entertainment division. So three parts. Okay, the Disney Plus is trying to compete with, like, Netflix. And because they're coming out with Disney Plus, Disney is not going to offer Disney entertainment of any kind on the Netflix channel. So that'll cause a loss of Disney Moves shows will cause a loss of $150 million a year. So This is what they're going. This is where they're going to go. Remember, they bought 21st Century Fox a year or so ago for $71 billion. And that all that stuff, the movies they make, they're going to decide whether it's going to go on this Disney Plus channel or not, you know, or just go into the traditional distribution. What is this going to do? I think there's the future, this digital entertainment in which you, the consumer, can pick what you want. You know, it's going to be, I think that's the future. You're not going to be tied to the cable or the satellite dish as far as getting your entertainment. You can buy different things and build your own, you know, list of things you want to watch. So I think that's where it's going to go. I think it's going to get, I mean, 5 years ago, no one was even thinking about this, but the success of Netflix has driven them to it. They can't avoid it anymore. 888-99-CHART. Let's go talk to BJ in San Jose. How you doing, BJ?
Good. See you. Can you hear me?
Sure. Yes. Go ahead. Do you want to talk about HSAs?
Yeah, thank you. Yes. I have a couple of comments. Actually, it's, I did some research and I have that account. It's actually a lot better than, your traditional IRA also, because it's all tax-free if you use for medical expenses, and most of the people have enough medical expenses anyway. But then if somebody has more money and then they take it out after 65, they can do it for any reason. All they have to pay is income tax, which is like your 401k or, IRA, right? So then the other thing I found out is you can use it as an emergency account, because if you have... as long as you have your receipts, if you need money from there, you can submit the receipt and get the money. So it's like almost like an emergency account.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the comments. That's very interesting, Edgar. I appreciate it. BJ, thank you very much. Let's go to Edgar in San Diego. I want to talk about Philip Morris. How you doing? How you doing, Edgar?
I'm great. How you doing?
Is
the PM Philip Morris International a separate entity from Philip Morris, which is they have a different symbol, MO?
Yes, they separated about 5 or 10 years ago into two divisions. One's called Altria now, and this one's called Philip Morris. They used to be one company, Philip Morris. But they separated. So what they really separated was domestic business from international business. You know, that's basically what they did.
Okay, and now my question is about PM. I was thinking about it mainly because their dividend looks pretty interesting to me.
Yes. Yes, it is a big dividend, and 6%, and they've been able to maintain that dividend forever, and it looks like they are still going to be able to maintain it. They have $5.28 cash flow and $5.29 earnings profits for next year. That's the estimate. They pay a 6% dividend, and that 6% dividend comes up to about $4.50. So, yeah, they can pay the dividend. They know that is their main attractiveness to their stock. So they're not going to do without the dividend if they can help it. So, if you're going to buy it, you buy it for the dividend, and it's a pretty good dividend at this rate, at this point. Pretty good dividend yield. So, yeah, I like it. We own Philip Morris is PM symbol, and Altria is MO. And those are the two tobacco. They're the two companies that split. Appreciate it. Thank you, Edgar. This is the Best Talk, and I'm Steve Peasley. The year seems to be moving as fast as the market is moving. And we're already into, this February 6th? Wow. Anyway, so onward we're going. 888-99-CHART is our number.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Have you visited investtalkacademy.com? You should. It can help you learn to invest like a pro. because it features online classes that can teach you how to grow your investments independently. Learn more at InvestTalkAcademy.com. Have you got a question for Steve? He's here and the lines are open. 888-99-CHART.
Okay, I guess this is the day for retirement accounts. And so Eric from San Mateo is calling about a Roth IRA. How you doing, Eric?
Great. Can you hear me, Steve?
Yes, I can.
All right. So this is for my cousin in his situation. So he's a stay-at-home dad. His wife works. He wasn't sure if he could contribute to a Roth IRA or if there's a limit on a joint income, or if you're limited that way.
Okay. The answer is generally yes. He can contribute to a Roth IRA. That's the general answer. There are limits. There are limits of income for regular IRAs. Then, if you make too much money, you can't do a regular IRA. And to be honest, I don't know for sure if there applies to a Roth IRA, because remember, Roth IRA you're being taxed on, you know, at the get-go. So the amount of money you make that year, they're still paying taxes on that money in a Roth IRA. I'm going to have to look that up. I don't know the answer to that, Eric.
Okay. Is it the amount that they make or that he makes?
No. They file jointly. It's how much money they make.
Got it.
Okay. It's husband and wife, right? Yeah. So, yeah, if it's a joint account, if they make, $250,000 or more, then they can't contribute to an IRA. You know, there's that kind of rules. I'm not an accountant, so this is not my area of expertise, but I should find that out because that's an interesting question. Eric, I appreciate it. Thank you for the call. 888-99-CHART, everybody. 888-992-4278. So Tesla reduced the price of their Model 3 for the second time this year. Remember, we're only into February 6th. For the second time, the Model 3 sedan reduced it because they're losing tax credits because they're starting to make too many cars. And, you know, the tax credits were designed to help start a car company and stuff. So they're losing those tax credits. Remember, the goal, and Musk has tweeted and stated many, many times, the goal is to get the Model 3 down to $30,000 per car. And he's having a hard time getting down there, especially with the tax credits fall off. Now, according to him, the Model 3 with mid-range batteries are $34,850. Not $30,000, but $34,850. But it's not quite true. Okay? Because the car really goes for $42,900, and he is subtracting, even today, the potential incentive that still exists at $3,750, and the gas savings of $4,300. So he's subtracting those two numbers from $42,900 to get it to $34,000. Huh? What? So it's not $34,850. He's calculating the gas savings over 6 years and deducting it from your car price. And say, see, I'm wondering if he built back in the cost of the electricity to keep the batteries powered. I don't know. He didn't mention that. But this is a good example of people fiddling around with statistics. You know, you can lie with the statistics more so than you can lie with you can lie with the facts. And he's giving facts. I'm not disputing his facts, but you can go try to buy the car for $35,000, right? The $34,000, whatever, and you won't be able to do it. You have to buy a $41,000 and something car. And that's for a mid-range battery. You know how much a Model 3 costs if you want all the bells and whistles? More than $60,000. I don't know how many of you are the everyday man that this car is designed for that can afford that. Not too many. Anyways, I thought that was interesting. I'm Steve Peasley, everybody, and this completes another InvestTalk program, another in a series going back to, what, 1999? That's when I started doing this. And I thank you for your loyal support. Really, I do. It wouldn't be here that long if it wasn't for you. Have a nice evening, everybody, and I'll be back tomorrow. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.